Do you remember last episode, I told you that I was recording the podcast in my pants? Well, I found it so liberating that I thought I'd do it again. Nah, just kidding. I'm fully clothed this time. Sorry about that. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me, my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. How have you been? Oh, this is serious this time. I'm going to ask you how you've been. I want you to actually reply. Okay, I want you to do this. I'm going to ask you, and you're going to say out loud how you've been. I don't care where you are. You could be in the gym. You could be on your drive to work. You could be in bed. You could be on the toilet. Why are you listening to my podcast while you're on the toilet? That's disrespectful, man. Disrespectful. Anyway, we're going to do this. And when I say we, I mean you. I want to ask you how you've been. You're going to tell me. Okay, you ready? Here it comes. How have you been? Did you do it? Did you do it? Do you feel good about yourself? Do you think, yeah, I did something. I've achieved something today. Or did you not? You're just listening. Be part of something. We're going to try again. How have you been? Now, I'm going to take it that you did reply then. And if you didn't reply, then I want you to feel guilty for the rest of the day. And then when you're going to bed tonight, you're brushing your teeth, you're thinking, what? Something happened today. What happened today that I did wrong? And there's going to be something niggling at the back of your brain. And you're going to be thinking, I did something wrong, but I can't remember what it is. Well, that's what it is. If you didn't reply, that's what it is. Anyway, that's not Christmassy, is it? But this is. It's a show about Christmas. Merry Christmas, you beautiful person. I've already said that bit. Did I say that bit? How do I start the show? No, I said, hello, you beautiful people. It's a show about Christmas. And we're going to start the show with this. Boys and girls, a couple of weeks ago, I received an email from listener Kevin Church, and I'm going to read it out to you now. Here it comes. This morning, I was cycling to work in that miserable, damp spring cold where you find yourself tucking your sleeves down and tightening your shoulders against the wind, and it sparked an idea I thought might make for an interesting discussion on the show. People often talk about the imagery connection between Christmas and winter, snowy cottages, horse-drawn wagons, warm drinks, fireplaces, Victorian streets, all of that. But I started wondering whether there's a deeper psychological or emotional connection between Christmas and cold temperatures themselves. The cold changes our behaviour and attitude. It turns us inward. It makes home feel more meaningful. It makes warmth feel earned. It encourages gathering, nesting, gratitude, memory, and even a heightened awareness of vulnerability or mortality. In the cold, people naturally focus more intentionally on comfort, family, light, food, and togetherness, which are all deeply tied to Christmas. There's also something interesting about contrast. The colder and darker the world outside feels, the more emotionally powerful warmth, generosity, music, lights and celebration become. Of course, Christmas isn't limited to cold places around the world, but winter itself psychologically amplifies the holiday. Perhaps you could mash together a segment exploring the relationship between Christmas and the human experience of cold, rather than just the aesthetic of snow. Well, I appreciate you giving me more work to do, Kevin, but it got me thinking. Christmas that we celebrate, a lot of people don't even really acknowledge the birth of Jesus Christ, even though that is what we are meant to be celebrating on the 25th of December. But a lot of what we celebrate as Christmas comes from the winter solstice, which is the 21st of December, the darkest day of the year. Things like Christmas trees and bringing greenery into your house isn't a Christian thing, it was a Yuletide thing, where in the old days people would bring in the greenery to kind of celebrate the coming of the sun again, or the Roman festival of Sol Invictus, which means the unconquerable sun, where they'd celebrate the sun god and the coming back of the sun. And it got me thinking about the southern hemisphere, and their winter, their darkest day, is in June. And so I looked into it. But here's the thing, the vast majority of the population of the globe is in the northern hemisphere. So in the southern hemisphere, most of the cultures are in southern Africa or in South America. And of course the Aborigines in Australia. Now, without being rude, some of these civilizations were more advanced than others, but none really quite as advanced as the ones in the Northern Hemisphere. However, I did find a couple of things that you might find interesting about the winter solstice and similar versions of Christmas that happen the other side of the year. Now, of course, I'm sure most of you are familiar with Leon Day, which is the 25th of June. That's called Leon Day because it's kind of the reverse of Noel, and it's the opposite date in the calendar of Christmas Day. And to be honest, there's not much in the way of celebrations goes on. I think a few Christmas podcasts do something about it. I've never bothered. I'm lazy like that. But one thing I did find that celebrates the winter solstice in June in the Southern Hemisphere was the Mayan celebration of Inti Raymi. Now, Raymi means festival, and Inti was the sun god. Now, the sun god, Inti, was the most venerated deity to the Incas. So they have this big celebration around the 21st of June that would last about 9 days, and it was filled with colourful dancing and processions as well as sacrifices. So a similar thing in a way to Christmas. Now, since 1944, an annual theatrical representation of the Inti Raymi festival has been taking place at a place called Sacsayhuaman. It's interesting, right? This place is spelled Sacsayhuaman, but if you say it right, it sounds like a sexy woman. Sacsayhuaman. Yeah, see? Celebrated on June the 24th, and it takes place in a place called Cusco. Now, Cusco is a city in Peru, which is the nearest city to Machu Picchu in the Andes, and Sexy Woman is about 1.2 miles away from there, and this is where they have this big ceremony. And you know what, boys and girls? I think I might have actually been to it. Seriously. So in 2002, back in my backpacking days, I went to Peru and Ecuador, and I was in Cusco. I didn't go to Machu Picchu. I must have been the only tourist who went to Cusco and never bothered going to Machu Picchu. I just couldn't be arsed in the end. My knees have been hurting for a few weeks, and I thought, you know what, forget it, I'm not doing it. So I just spent my time there getting drunk, which is what I did most of my time backpacking, loved it. Anyway, I was there in Cusco when this big ceremony went on, and it was in Sacsayhuaman. And it's this big open area. You're up in the mountains there in Cusco, and it's sort of all rocky on like a hillside. And yeah, we stood there, a bunch of us, hundreds and hundreds of people. The whole hillside was filled with people all looking down on this grassy plain or field while they did the ceremony. I can't remember much about it because, well, I think I was drunk. But one thing I do remember is the toilets, and they had like 2 cubicles, but they were constantly full, so people were just peeing outside them. There was kids just pooing in the grass. Yeah, and I remember desperately needing this wee, but I couldn't get from where I was to the toilets. I'm a grown man. It's very rare that I desperately need a wee. Do you know what I mean? I can normally hold it, I'm fine. But this was one of those where if I didn't do so, I was going to wet myself. So I got an empty bottle and went up against the wall where no one was looking and just peed in the bottle. Don't forget, I was surrounded by hundreds of people. It was like being at a football stadium, but on a hillside. Yeah, can't remember much about the festival. Remember thinking, you know, it was all right, it was something. But here's the thing, right? It was definitely in the same place, and it was definitely some festival about the sun god, but I don't remember when I was in Cusco. It was in 2000. It was like 24 years ago. I can't remember what time of year. So it's possible they do loads of different festivals throughout the year. It could have been the equinox, like the spring equinox, which is in, is it March, around then? Yeah, could have been that one. I don't know. But there's a lot of people there, loads of people. So many people had to pee in a bottle. Yeah. Anyway, so that's Inti Raymi, and apparently it's still celebrated by some of the indigenous cultures throughout the Andes. So that's something. Now, the other festival I've got is a lot more recent, and it is called Midwinter Day, and this is celebrated at the South Pole in Antarctica. Now, the first time anyone was actually there on Midwinter Day was in 1898, and this was the crew of the Belgica, I don't know. They were the first to spend Midwinter Day there, but the first celebrations for Midwinter Day were credited to Robert Falcon Scott. Now, if you were in the UK, you'd definitely be familiar with Robert Falcon Scott, and he's known as Scott of the Antarctic. He was the first British man to make it to the South Pole, and by all accounts, he only missed the guys that actually were the first people there. I think it was some Norwegian people. They beat him by like a few days. Yeah, but they didn't make it safely back. sadly. Yeah, him and his crew all carked it. Anyway, the first celebration was held on the 23rd of June 1902, and it was a bit of a little party amongst the men on this expedition. And it was really just an imitation of Christmas. They cooked and ate Christmas food, they opened presents that they brought down with them, and they decorated their little station with a Christmas tree and stuff like that. And you can really imagine, if you're at the South Pole, it's completely pitch black throughout the whole day. And it's only a few days after the winter solstice, you'd start to get a glimmer of light on the horizon around midday, which wouldn't last long. And then it's weeks or even months until the sun actually starts appearing over the horizon. So anyway, that was the first one. And then further expeditions, including the Nimrod and Terra Nova, among others, they continued the tradition, but the celebrations, they stopped imitating Christmas and started becoming its own thing. So nowadays, there are a number of bases at the South Pole, and because it's dark all day long and you get the seasonal build-up of ice, where the ice on the cap actually doubles in size, they don't get any visitors or any shipping for months at a time, like months before Midwinter's Day and months after. So you can imagine how isolated these crews feel. And for weeks at a time, the crews are confined to their station and like the closest area around it. They can't go anywhere because it's just so cold because of the storms and the weather and the build-up of ice. Yeah, they can't do anything. So because of that, when Midwinter's Day comes, they know they're halfway through the darkest period, and it's the biggest celebration of the year, even bigger than Christmas. And because there's no access, the people on these bases will have already been there for months before Midwinter comes. Now, the Midwinter Day festival happens on all of the individual bases around the South Pole, and they all tend to celebrate the same sort of things, regardless of their nationality or religion. So, greetings are sent by telecommunications. Obviously, in the old days, you wouldn't have been able to do this, but nowadays you can. And they get messages from home and from the other bases, and even from world leaders. The Prime Minister of the UK is often sends a message to the people on the South Pole bases on Midwinter's Day. Now, some of the things they celebrate are the giving of gifts. Now, when people go to these bases to study, they fill in their next of kin. So the Antarctic Welfare Officer, he contacts these people and says, oh, could you send me a gift and I will forward it on to the station. Now, this has to be done months before Midwinter's Day because there's just no access down to the area. So the gifts are sent in months in advance and they've been there waiting for Christmas Day. So when the time comes, it's like a real nice surprise to get a gift from home that they might not have been expecting. And most people on the bases only serve a 12-month stretch. So they'd only celebrate one of these Midwinter's Days. So it's a real surprise. You know, it's not something they'd be expecting, which is nice. Now, another thing that takes place is a nice twist on the Lord of Misrule. Now, if you're a fan of Christmas podcasts, you would have heard of the Lord of Misrule. In medieval times, at Christmas, they'd have a guy, one of the lower servants, who would get to be like the king for the day, and he'd get to boss around everyone. Well, in a similar kind of twist, the winter base commander cooks breakfast for everyone on the base. So the night before, he goes around and takes breakfast orders from all the different staff members, saying what they'd like, and it's got to be something, obviously, that they could prepare on the base. And then the next morning, he gets up early and cooks breakfast, and everyone on the base, apart, of course, from the winter base commander, they get breakfast in bed. He takes it round and feeds it to them. Well, not feeds it to them, but gives it to them. Which is cool. Another thing they do is like a secret Santa thing, and each person has to make a gift, and this could be anything. I did see a picture and it was nice. Some person had made like a version of Monopoly on a wooden board. Like another one just had like a little skeleton of a penguin in a glass cabinet. But it could be all sorts of things, and these gifts are made, wrapped up, and then they're put in a huge pile in the middle of the room, and then the youngest person gets to pick first, and each person picks a gift and unwraps it, and that's their gift for Christmas, well, for Midwinter's Day. Also, very similar to traditions here in the UK, I've spoken about it before, not so much on Christmas Day, normally Boxing Day, people go out for a dip in the sea, and on these bases, some of them are nearer the coast, they would cut a hole in the snow down into the sea with steps going into it, and they might go for a dip, yeah, just jump in, and then get out as quick as they can. Now, seawater freezes at minus 2 degrees. So if they're jumping in the water, that water's going to be no less than minus 2. And then they get out, dry off, and run inside and get warm pretty quick, of course. But the main thing of the Midwinter Day celebration is the meal. And the meal is 7 or 8 different courses, like a taster menu. But from what I could gather, each course is quite substantial and is served with cocktails and aperitifs. And then everyone gets pretty drunk, by all accounts, afterwards. And one other thing is the BBC Midwinter Radio broadcast. And this is broadcast out for the 4 British bases that are down at the South Pole. But it can be heard, obviously, by any bases in that area. And it's sent out by the BBC World Service. I don't know what they talk about. Probably talking about the sunny weather home in the UK or something. I don't know. But anyway, there you go. So it's like the alternate of Christmas celebrated at the South Pole. And from what I was reading, the only other place this is celebrated is people that have spent time at the South Pole might have a little celebration at home to commemorate their time at the South Pole on Midwinter's Day, and also to raise a glass to the people that are there while they're back home. So there we go, boys and girls, a little look at the Midwinter Festival in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, boys and girls, we're going to do this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? This town has declared itself Christmas City, USA, as it has a deep connection to Christmas. Located in the Lehigh Valley, it was originally settled by the Moravians, the oldest Protestant denomination in the world. The town received its name on Christmas Eve, 1741, when a group gathered for Christmas services and christened the settlement as Bethlehem, after the biblical town where Jesus was born. The holiday has been forever etched into its identity, and Bethlehem has celebrated the spirit of Christmas ever since. A lone star, like the famed Star of Bethlehem, has shone nightly over the city since the 1930s. Originally made of wood, the glittering symbol is a reminder of Bethlehem's enduring connection to the Christmas story. Today, the huge star shines with more than 250 LED lights and is perched on the peak of South Mountain, and it can be spotted from more than 20 miles away. In addition, the first Christmas tree to be decorated in America was documented in this town in 1747. The tree was decorated with apples, candles, and Bible verses. You can visit the historic Moravian district and take walking tours to learn where Bethlehem's Christmas traditions began, the city's heritage, and customs like the Putz Nativity displays and Moravian stars. Many stores there will feature Moravian-inspired decor and Christmas ornaments, and Bethlehem maintains a strong Christmas identity all year through its history, architecture, museums, and culture. Now, if you know of another enlightened and symbolic place of rich history, you shine a light on it for Jack, he'll illuminate it for me, and together we'll tell you where to find Christmas around the world.
Another great one there, Bob. He just keeps coming up with them. It's brilliant. Great work, Bob. Great work. He'll be back again in a bit. But now, boys and girls, we're doing this. Okay, boys and girls, it's this episode's joke, and I know every time I make a big thing about how bad the joke is, and then I tell the joke, and then I regret having told the joke, and the jokes aren't that good. I mean, I've told a couple of decent ones over the years, but generally, the quality of Christmas jokes, they're not that good, but you just got to accept that, okay? I don't even know why I do this bit at the start, telling you how bad the joke's going to be, and then telling you the joke. I should just tell you the joke and move on. Right, here we go. I'm just going to tell the joke and move on. Here we go. Do you know what? I can't do it. I can't. No. Now that I've built it up to be bad, I can't even go through with it. I'll try and do it next week. I'm not doing it this week. Forget it. No, forget it. Let's move on. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Boys and girls, last episode's quiz, I knew it was tricky, I didn't know how tricky. These are the scores from the last episode. With 1 point, we've got Todd Pulte, but also with 1 point, his wife Mary Pulte. So, you know, that's something. With 2 points, we've got Pamela Wootton. With 3 points, we've got Dawna Lovejoy and David Ferguson. With 4 points, Lindsay Allen, Nettie Tebow, Nick Cole, Barbara Wright, Caroline Cole, John Gomez and Dave McRae. Dave McRae sent me a lovely email saying how much he enjoys the show. That was the first time he's emailed in. So well done for that, Dave. Keep up the good work. With 5 points, we've got Jack Unverfirth, Frank Talley, Stephen Beach, Sean Sotka, Martin Goodman and Jennifer Kay. With 6 points, which is what I scored, we've got Mike Westphal. And with 7 points, that's the highest score, with 7 points, we've got Ed Daly and Benji Pearson, who is still on fire. Great work, Benji. And I got an email from Benji, because I don't know if you remember, but some of the questions were a bit Scandinavian-based, and I said, I hope Benji Pearson got those right. He did. He got all the Scandinavian-based ones correct. Well done, young man. And he also got the one, do you remember the one about the Dala horse decorations in Sweden? Do you remember that? He knew it. And not only that, he has many of them. He referred to it as a Dala Hast, which is Dala was the decoration and Hast meaning horse, the Dala horse. I don't know what Dala bit means. But anyway, he said he's got a number of those decorations around his house, but they keep them up all year long. And he sent me a picture of him, his wife, and I believe it's King Charles he's got there with him, his son, at the biggest Dala horse in Utah. And it's a bit shorter than Benji, but it's still a pretty damn big horse, and it's just a horse decoration. And what was interesting, after I saw that, I was like, hang on a minute. I've just watched this Netflix movie with Sally Field in it called Remarkably Bright Creatures. And part of the storyline is that she's got some of these little Dala horses, little ones, and one of them gets broken. I'm not going to go into the story. If you haven't seen that film, very nice film. My wife loved it. I liked it. So yeah, you should check that out. Remarkably Bright Creatures. So that was quite the coincidence. Benji sends me the picture just after I've seen him on TV. Now I know what a Dala Hast is. Great work, Benji. Great work. So boys and girls, let's face it. Those scores, they weren't great. Apart from Ed Daly and Benji Pearson, you boys can be very proud of yourselves. But everyone else, yeah, not the best. So what I'm going to do to cheer everyone up is we're going to turn things around a bit. And we're going to bring back, are you ready? Santa Banter. Yes. And everyone out there is thinking, what's Santa Banter? Well, some of you would be thinking, well, I think I remember Santa Banter. Or Pamela Wootton is going to be thinking, oh, not Santa Banter. I hate Santa Banter. Tough, Pamela Wootton. Tough. The first time I did Santa Banter, Pamela Wootton did email to complain. So here's the deal. Santa Banter, it's a quiz kind of thing. I'm going to describe something. You got to say what that thing is. I'm going to give you an example. The thing to remember is, it always rhymes. So the thing, for example, could be, Father Christmas is enjoying a fizzy orange drink. That would be, Santa is drinking Fanta. Easy. You should all get 10 for this. Here comes your first one. Don't forget, they're all Christmas based. Some glowing decorations for your tree do not like high places. That was number one. Number two, Father Christmas's mode of transport is on its way to the old name for Mumbai. You enjoying it so far? Probably not. We're going to carry on. Okay, tricky one. And not tricky to get the answer, just tricky for me to try and describe it. Because all I've got is the answers. I've got to do the description myself. I should have explained this at the start. I didn't. I'm doing it now. I've done it now. Finished. I'm moving on. I'm doing this question. The present my true love gave to me on the first day of Christmas is not a fan of a soft French cheese. Next one. Those things that chime have been put away in a room for a prisoner. Got it? Next one. A piece of a green plant that has red berries is in a very good mood. Do you want me to repeat that? I'm not going to. I just want to know if you want me to repeat it. You do want me to repeat it? Oh, that's a shame, isn't it? Because I'm not going to. I'd already told you I'm not going to. Okay, next one. Now, this is an English quiz, so you've got to think of the word that English people would use for this thing. The festive sweater is going to break up with his girlfriend. Yeah, the festive sweater is going to break up with his girlfriend. Got that one? Let's hope so. Question number something. A small green vegetable that you'd have on your Christmas dinner is at the gym, exercising. I'm not going to repeat it. I feel like I should for that one. I'm not going to anyway, because I repeated the last one and I felt ashamed of myself afterwards. Okay, next one. This red sweet dressing you put on turkey gives me a sore throat and makes it hard to speak. Okay? You enjoying this? Come on, Pamela, cheer up. It's Christmas. Crikey. Okay. A bird with a red breast is playing a game you'd play at Halloween to get fruit from a bucket. I think I'm making them too easy for you, to be honest. Okay, next one. The people that help Father Christmas have soiled their underwear. That's not one of the questions. I just thought you'd like to know. It is one of the questions. Come on. Come on, Pamela. What's wrong with you? Goodness. Do you know what, Pamela? If you're going to be like that, fast forward it. Everyone else is enjoying themselves. Why have you got to bring it down? Okay, next one. Oh, that was it, actually. That's not the next one. That's it. That's 10. Now, here's the problem, boys and girls. I can't tell you what my score was because I've had to make these questions up myself. I get the answers. I give you the questions. And I'm probably going to forget what I said for each of them. But here come the answers anyway. I'll try and remember the clues I gave you because I made them up as I went along looking at the cards. So, festive decorations, yeah, they're lights, and they don't like high places, they're scared of heights. Christmas lights are scared of heights. Now, you've got to get the lights and heights bit right. If you get the word in between, like the scared bit, if you've got something like scared, we'll accept it. So if you said the Christmas lights have a fear of heights, I'll accept that. Okay, that's the same with all these questions. Right, question number two. Father Christmas's mode of transport is on its way to a town that is now called Mumbai. That Santa's sleigh is off to Bombay. The present my true love gave to me on the first day of Christmas, that's the partridge in a pear tree, doesn't like a soft cheese brie. A partridge in a pear tree doesn't like brie. Okay, this one I thought might be a little bit tricky. Those festive chimes, those are Christmas bells, and they're in a room in a prison. That's a cell, isn't it? Christmas bells are locked in cells. Do you know what, Pamela? I'm beginning to see your point, actually. Yeah. Okay, we're just going to get through this. We'll just get through it and then we can move on. Okay, a piece of a green plant with red berries is in a good mood. Well, a sprig of holly is very jolly. Next one, a festive sweater is going to break up with his girlfriend. Well, the Christmas jumper is going to dump her. Oh, dear. We can do this. We're nearly done. A small green vegetable you'd eat at Christmas is exercising at the gym. Well, a Brussels sprout is working out. Yeah. Next one. A red sweet dressing you'd have on your turkey makes my throat hurt and I can't speak. Well, that means cranberry sauce makes me hoarse. Yeah, we're nearly done. Only two more. Don't worry, Pamela. Don't worry. A bird with a red breast is doing a Halloween game. You know, we get the fruit out of the bucket. A robin is apple bobbin. And the last one, the people that help Santa have soiled their underwear. Santa's elves are pooing themselves. There you go. That's it. I hope you did well. Make sure you email me your score, because it's got to be better than last time, hasn't it? They were fairly easy, I think. Weren't they? Come on. And Pamela, you're beautiful. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
The doctor told me I was going to need new glasses, so I'm going to go out and get some beer steins today. I have been a bit ponderous over these past 2 weeks. I know that when I started, Do You Hear What I Hear? The idea came from the Christmas words that we share in common with the UK, but not the meanings. It has been a fun adventure exploring the different slang terms and expressions that are unfamiliar in the US by putting boots on the ground in the UK. However, I do know that some of these words can be a bit adult and describe not the most wholesome of topics for a Christmas podcast. It is a bit of a catch-22, as the racy words usually have the best history and colorful stories. I was thinking about all of this and about giving myself the boot when I decided to turn to the two experts who always lift my spirits and give me faith in the next generation, Robin and Juno from I'm Not Complaining. Whereas I was getting bogged down in the moral and ethical dilemmas of combining dirty talk and Santa Claus, their unguarded honesty is truly refreshing. I love how they can celebrate life with wide-eyed wonder and without embarrassment. They aren't quaking in their boots. Their podcast is direct, honest, and full of sincerity, and their innocent charm can be disarming. Because you know what? Sometimes farty facts are just that, farty facts. So I decided that I was not ready to hang up my boots. After binging on a good dose of their episodes, I felt much better and was able to veer away from the blue by wading into the world of clean-hearted fun. I was now ready to pull myself up by the bootstraps. What got my Do You Hear What I Hear motor revving again? The girls introduced me to the word wellies. Now I know it sounds like a sickness or a small dog, but for the Brits, a welly is a common term used for what we in the States would call a rain boot, especially that heavy, waterproof rubber kind. The name comes from the Duke of Wellington, whose preferred style inspired the original Wellington boot design. The Duke had them created in the 19th century by asking his shoemaker to modify a military boot called the Hessian boot. The Wellington boot was considered durable for battle, but still comfortable enough to wear afterward. The boots were considered fashionable, and patriotic British men were eager to show respect to Wellington as he was a war hero. Over time, these just became known as wellies. Now, wellies are deeply associated with the English countryside and the rainy weather, but the term also has a bit of cultural charm in the UK. The phrase, to give it some welly, means to put a lot of force or energy into something, like kicking a football hard or accelerating a car quickly. There is a sport called welly wanging, where competitors have to throw a welly as far as they can from a standing or a running start. There is also the welly boot dance, which is rumored to have been performed by African miners to keep their spirits up while working in poor conditions. There is even the welly boot song by Scottish comedian and musician William Billy Connolly, which became his theme song, and it has lyrics like, if it wasn't for your wellies, where would you be? You'd be in the hospital or infirmary, because you would have a dose of the flu or even pleurisy if you didn't have your feet in your wellies. Well, I did get the mental recharge I needed. Not only was I properly educated on British footwear, but I now feel slightly more cultured, dare I say it, to boot. Cheers and happy Christmas.
You know, that's a funny one, that is, because, you know, Santa banter earlier, you know, Pamela's favourite thing. Well, when I was going through the questions, one of them came up and it was Jack Skellington is wearing a Wellington. And I was going to do that one, but then I thought, oh, I don't know if people overseas are going to know what Wellington boots are. So I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't, because it turns out that people in the US don't know what wellies are. Well, now you do. All thanks to Bob. Great work, Bob. Don't forget to listen to Bob's podcast, boys and girls, festive foreign film fans. There's a link in the show notes. You can't miss it. Have a listen. But now we're doing this.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Boys and girls, a couple of episodes ago, I talked about the Alastair Sim version of A Christmas Carol. And when I was talking about it, I mentioned the chap that played the young Scrooge. He's an actor called George Cole, and he'd been in some other stuff. And one of the things I mentioned was a TV show called Minder. And what I'd forgotten is that the two main characters of Minder released a Christmas single. And I've got to talk about it, because it's naff. So Minder was this TV show. It was massive. It ran from 1979 to 1994, and at its peak in the early 80s, it was getting 16 million viewers per episode. It ran for 10 series, and George Cole, who I mentioned earlier, he was in all 10 series playing a chap called Arthur Daly, and he was like this wheeler-dealer guy who'd buy and sell stuff, and frequently it was illegal deals he was doing. And the Minder character in it was played by a chap called Dennis Waterman. He played Terry McGann. He was only in the first 7 series, but they did another 3 series with a chap called Gary Webster, who played the Minder. But to be honest, I think most people have probably forgotten the later series. They only really remember Dennis Waterman. Now, Terry McGann, his character, he was an ex-boxer, but he'd got done for some crimes, spent a bit of time in prison, and when he came out, he needed a job. So Arthur Daly hired him to be his bodyguard or his minder. And apparently that's like a Cockney word, minder was. And on Wikipedia, it says that this show was responsible for introducing the word minder as a bodyguard into the popular lexicon. I don't know how true that is, but then you think, where did the term childminder come from? Did that come after this show? Probably not. Interestingly, Arthur Daly, his character, quite often you'd refer to someone who's a bit of a wheeler dealer as an Arthur Daly type. So that's also made it into common language in the UK. It's not so much these days. Don't forget, this series ended over 30 years ago. But still, people are still very fond of it and are well aware of the show. So, like I said, the show is pretty much about how Terry McGann has to look after Arthur Daly because he's doing all these shady deals. And Dennis Waterman, the guy who played Terry McGann, he actually sang the theme tune. Have a listen to it. This is the theme tune. Now, that song was released as a single when the TV show first came out in 1979, but it failed to chart. But then it was re-released a year later when the show had got more popular, and it got to number 3 in the charts in the UK. There you go. Anyway, Dennis Waterman is a really prominent actor in the UK, very popular. Now, there's a comedy sketch show in the UK called Little Britain. It ran in the early 2000s. And one of the sketches always had Dennis Waterman in it, whereas one of the two guys in the show, they played Dennis Waterman, but they play him as like a really tiny little guy. Because when, I think it was David Walliams, he's one of the two guys in Little Britain, when he actually met Dennis Waterman was a lot smaller than he was expecting. So in Little Britain, his character's really tiny, and he'd be there talking to his agent going, write the theme tune, sing the theme tune. Now, he didn't write these theme tunes, but he did often sing them, and in 4 different shows, starting with Minder, he sung the theme tune. Yeah, 2 of the others were one that I was a big fan of called On the Up. That was like a sitcom from the late 80s, early 90s. And then also more recently, a TV show called New Tricks, which was massively popular. Really popular show that was. Anyway, in 1983, him and Arthur Daly wrote a song to release as a Christmas single, and it's called What Am I Gonna Get Her Indoors for Christmas? Let me play a bit for you.
It's tough and it's lonely in top management.
Oh, don't give me no earache, you don't even pay your rent.
I've got a lock up with no lock on and it's snowing outside.
If you don't get her a present soon, there'd be nowhere to hide.
I've got a lovely furry coat, I could tell her it's me.
Now she's a sassy skunk, cos it don't have pen and ink.
It doesn't.
It does.
You know.
I would. Here's a turn up with a book.
What?
Hold on, here comes Chisholm.
He's giving me a funny look. What now?
Sing, he don't know one carol from another.
What'll I get for Christmas for her indoors?
Well, I'm sure for a minute.
Don't tell me your problems, cos this one's yours.
Tried shopping?
That's typical.
Right,
no respect.
You made me laugh, you do.
No, Terence, please.
Just leave me out.
After all I've done for you.
What are we gonna get for her indoors?
So the deal with Arthur Daly's wife, she was one of those off-screen characters that you never get to see. Over the years, there's been a number of similar characters. On Seinfeld, Kramer would often talk about his friend, Bob Saccomanno. Or more prominently, Niles in Fraser, he'd often talk about his wife Maris, but she was never seen in the show. Well, this was a similar thing. In the 10 series of Minder, not once did you ever get to see Arthur Daly's wife, even though he'd frequently be talking about her indoors. So the single is pretty much Arthur is talking about what he's going to buy his wife for Christmas, and they're talking about all the different options. Have a listen to a little bit more.
A typewriter with ribbons that was worn by Lady Di.
A lovely piece of steak, but when she whacks you in the eye...
She wouldn't.
She would.
I know her.
How much?
All right, I will concede. But we're sitting here with nothing, and it's nearly Christmas Eve. Yeah, what about that perfume that I purchased down the winch?
You spilt it on the counter and it blistered every inch.
Oh, yeah, we could bottle it and call it the elixir of life.
You give it to her, my son. Next year you'll need a new wife.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very nice, would it?
Well, it's not for me to comment.
What'll I get for Christmas for her indoors?
Now, I couldn't find a promotional video of it, so I'm guessing they didn't make one. But they did perform it live on a few TV shows, and one of those TV shows was Top of the Pops, which I've mentioned so many times in the show. This was the most popular music show ever in Great Britain, I guess. Sadly, they stopped making it about 20 years ago, which I think is a blooming travesty, and they blooming well should. They should bring it back. Anyway... It was released for Christmas, December 1983, and it got to the dizzy heights of number 21. Yeah, so not a massive success, but still, it's there. But it's not a song you ever hear on the radio or anywhere. And the only reason I was familiar with it, because 1983, I wouldn't have even been 10 by that point, so I wouldn't have remembered seeing it on TV. The only reason I'm familiar with it is because there's a TV show that used to be on called Top of the Pops 2. And what this show was just a highlight show from Top of the Pops, and they just have loads of different performances of people that have been on the show over the years. And on one of the Christmas episodes, they replayed this old clip of those two, and that's how I remember it. If you want to have a look at it, it's quite easy to find. Just go on YouTube and type in "what am I going to get her indoors" and you'll get to see it. I don't know why you'd want to do a thing like that, but you know, it's something, isn't it? So there we go, boys and girls. That is the young Scrooge singing a song on Top of the Pops. Do you want to have a little bit more? Tiny bit.
Oh, Terence, this is serious. We gotta do something soon.
Why don't you just not go home,
eh?
She'd be over the moon.
That is very wounding, Terence. Wounding and ungrateful, that's what you are.
Well, I'm entitled to be the money you don't pay me, eh?
What are we gonna get for her indoors?
Now let's do this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is the autobiography of Brian Blessed. Now, you might not be familiar with Brian Blessed. If you're not, I have no idea why not, because he is an esteemed British actor. He turns 90 this year, and he's been in loads of stuff. He's done the voice of Santa 3 times and played Santa 1 time, which amazes me, to be honest. I would have thought it would be dozens more times than that. If you're not familiar with him, he played Boss Nass in Star Wars. He also played Voltan in Flash Gordon from 1980. Do you remember? Gordon's alive? And he did the voice of Clayton in the Disney cartoon version of Tarzan and provided the Tarzan yell for that film. So there you go. He's got a very recognisable voice. If you heard his voice, you'd be like, oh yeah, of course I know that voice. Everyone knows that voice. Anyway, his autobiography, I haven't even finished it yet. I'm about halfway through and I'm loving it. It's just so interesting. I highly recommend it. It's called Absolute Pandemonium, Brian Blessed, a memoir. I really think you'd enjoy it. Even if you're not familiar with his work, I think you'll find it interesting. And I'm listening to the audiobook on Audible, and it's nearly 14 hours long. And what that means is you're getting more book for your buck. Yeah, I hate it when I get a book of Audible and it's like 7 hours long. I'm thinking, I've had other books that are nearly 40 hours. Goodness. So there you go. Check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. That's my recommendation. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I've got to say a big thank you, of course, to Bob Baker for sending in his fantastic segments. Thanks so much, Bob. And also, thank you to every single one of you that sent in your scores, despite the fact that they weren't very good. Well done for that, kids. Well done for that. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. Just drop me an email at totalchristmas@gmail.com. And when I say if you want to get in touch, what am I talking about? You've got to get in touch because you've got to send me a score. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
I triple dog dare you.
Schwartz created a slight breach of etiquette by skipping the triple dare and going right for the throat.
All right.